Welcome back to the Ultimate Athlete Podcast, where we help you fix injuries, get flexible, and build a strong athletic body for life. In today's episode, I'm speaking with Marcus Philly, a former D1 athlete, 6 times CrossFit Games competitor, and CEO/founder of FunctionalBodybuilding.com. After the 2016 CrossFit Games, Marcus was burnt the hell out, training 3 times a day, deadlifting 550 pounds, and crushing endless Metcon workouts eventually left him feeling thrashed. Fortunately, he rebuilt himself with a new, smarter, safer style of training that he now calls functional bodybuilding. In today's episode, Marcus shares what functional bodybuilding is, the secrets of the superfit, and teaches you how you can get a sculpted body without sacrificing speed, power, or health. So without further ado, please help me welcome a man who was once the 12th fittest man in the world, the functional bodybuilder himself, Marcus Philly. So welcome to the Ultimate Athlete Podcast. I'm here with Marcus Philly, and I want to jump right in a little bit about your story. And there was something on your website that caught my attention where you talk about the secret of the superfit, which occurs to me as kind of like the dark secret of the superfit, which is you write, the secret is you can look chiseled with muscle, deliver powerful performance, and feel absolutely broken. And so in my words, you can look great and feel like crap. And as I understand it, this directly relates to your personal story. So you can share that story with us.
Sure. Yeah. I'd be happy to share that story. It's not necessarily that. I think that the essence of that message is, don't really just judge a book by its cover, especially when it comes to the human body. Our form that we have on the outside doesn't always reflect how we feel on the inside, and vice versa. So that how that touched me in my life was really as a like an elite competitive athlete in the sport, specifically the sport of CrossFit. I came up in the CrossFit competitive world at a time where it was still early days of the sport. It was young, growing, wasn't a lot known about what we were all doing to ourselves. And we all really just kind of trained in a way year round that was probably more intense than we should have. There wasn't a lot of respect early on to having seasons, having off seasons, having periodization. So a lot of us ran ourselves into the ground, and we just sort of felt, in this perpetual state of soreness and sort of like tired. And then particularly around competition season, you ramp things up, the adrenaline, the cortisol keep you going. And then afterwards, there's kind of that big crash, that big letdown. And, when I finished my competitive career, I was sort of at the top of my game, but I was also the most broken and, beat down that I'd ever been. And it kind of happened all at a time in my life where I was taking on some bigger responsibilities, some choices that I made as a father, or to become a father, as a husband, start a business. So, I finished my competitive career, had this big crash after the season was over, felt pain and a couple joints in my body so severe that I was certain there was going to be a surgical intervention that had to happen to feel right again. I was just, I was tired. It was hard to want to even train in any way that resembled what I'd done in the past. But on the surface, here I was, ripped, muscular, 12th fittest in the world, CrossFit Games athlete, And so on the surface, wasn't really reflecting how I felt on the inside. And I think that to me is like, people strive to, people want to strive to look and perform a certain way because that's what they see. It's like, but what does it take to do that? What's a realistic, consequence or trade-off to feel, to look that way? It might be feeling in a way that isn't in alignment with how you really want to feel.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So you had this, I know you also were a highly competitive Division I soccer player, which I wasn't a Division I soccer player, but I played soccer my whole life. That's intense training. And you moved into CrossFit and competed in that at a super high level. You reached this burnout point, but you're still, from the looks of it on Instagram and elsewhere, training really hard and looking really great. So what changed about your training? I'm sure it's not as simple as, oh, I just don't train so hard. Your training It sounds like you sort of created a new methodology, a new way of training, which allows you to look and feel and move like an athlete, but without the burnout and the achy joints and the constant, you know, feeling like crap. What changed between that breakdown after your final CrossFit competition and how you train now?
Well, I think it's just been an evolving process of understanding a pretty central concept to training, which is intensity or effort. And there's a certain amount of effort that we need to give, or certain level of intensity we need to achieve in order to see some results, because intensity is, that's the training stress that creates change and adaptation in the body. Bigger muscles, lose body fat, improve aerobic capacity, increase strength, whatever the thing you're trying to do is. And other sports have recognized this within their disciplines. You know, soccer has a season and it has an off season. You know, there's, and you ask the athletes that are, you know, that made it to the Sweet 16 or the Final Four, or, you know, national champions in Division One, you know, NCAA. It's like at the end of the season, those people that made it all the way through the playoffs, like, it's exciting. They push themselves, but man, it's a lot of work, and it's that much more work. It's that much more intense. You've extended the intensity of your season by, you know, potentially 6 weeks to make it through a tournament like that. And all the teams that went home after round one, they're resting and recharging and working on next season. CrossFit was a unique circumstance, because we didn't really understand what that seasonality looked like, because fitness is for life. You're supposed to do CrossFit. You're supposed to do your fitness every day, right? It's just part of, it's general, you know, CrossFit was proposed as this approach to general physical preparedness. You do it 3 days, you take a day off, you do it 3 days, you take a day off. It just goes on forever. And when that got kind of applied to the sport, it was like, you do NFL football 3 days, take a day off, NFL football 3 days, take a day off, and you just never take an off season. That's kind of how it went, you know, for years and years and years. So the evolution beyond that was simply to say, okay, look, I've been exposed to what training can feel like when you're just in the gym to improve. I've felt what training can feel like to really push it intensely inside of a competitive sport. And then I experienced what it was like to push intensely without really relenting for long periods of time, combining different disciplines in a way that hadn't really been combined before. So maxing out on your running and your lactic threshold, while maxing out on your weightlifting and your Olympic lifting, and while maxing out on your ability to do push-ups and muscle-ups and walk on your hands, and, you know, and mix it all together. It's like that without a true break was hard. And there was an opportunity to take a break because, you know, it was such a fast growing sport and you wanted to get ahead. You didn't feel like you could take time to sort of develop slowly. There was somebody else who was, you know, getting ahead. Now that was a long, long setup for the answer, which is, all right, so what have I done since then? Well, those years competing in fitness was beautiful for me because it exposed me to a lot of different disciplines of training that I might not ever have explored. I might not have ever explored Olympic weightlifting to that depth. I might not have ever explored endurance training to that depth, or gymnastics training, or, you know, the combination of all of those disciplines. And that to me redefined what the journey of an athlete could look like. And I want the general population to explore their bodies in much the same way that an athlete does. We stay fit, we learn skills, we build upon that fitness, and then we apply that fitness to these new acquired skills. And it's that growth, that learning, building fitness, learning, building fitness, that makes it such an enjoyable process, one that can last a lifetime. And I want people to be training for life. I don't want it to just be a quick thing. And so I really thought, oh gosh, this concept of CrossFit is so beautiful because it's going to keep people training for life. There's always something to learn. There's always more to get better at. But the problem was that I know I was a unique example of it pushing it at high thresholds of intensity all the time. But this was pervasive amongst the community. And it was like, okay, how can we redefine what it means to train and to learn and to be an athlete for life? And the key to unlocking that was really understanding intensity and understanding, you know, proper doses of it, and then creating environments where clients could train, I could train, where I could come in and give good effort, but not take it too far, not be encouraged to go as fast as I could, not necessarily be encouraged to lift as heavy as I you know, could every day, but to really understand, let's get that little bit of intensity that we need to make change, and then let's save some for the next day and the next day. Because a 5-year or a 6-year, you know, journey through a fitness program and then a plateau and then a decline where you stop, to me is not as, it's not the goal. We want something that, you know, has a slow gradual curve over decades and decades.
Totally. Totally. That resonates a lot with me, because when I created this Ultimate Athlete podcast, when I think of the word ultimate athlete in my own mind, I'm actually thinking of like, 100-year-old competing in decathlon, like someone who's got that longevity where they've that slow curve where they've been training their entire life, developing their fitness and their strength and their capacity, balance, and their ability to run and jump and throw and do all these different things at a very advanced age, at the level that they can. But it's kind of like someone who, like, I saw your face light up when you talked about wanting to, you know, help people explore. This is lifelong, you said. And I feel the same way. Like, I want to be an athlete in my older age, exploring of my body in a variety of different kind of ways. So,
another way I could really tighten up that description is, you know, there's people that decide they want to just move and exercise. And then there's people that decide they want to train and improve and get better. And I think that the exercise movement concept, like I'm just coming in to get a sweat and to burn some calories, is not the way to stay fit for life. Mm-hmm. I think that has a very, very limited lifespan to it. The moment you actually start to train your body and you can see the physical changes that come with training and applying intensity in smart ways, that becomes this rich experience of growing and learning and being able to make the changes we want in our bodies and experience all the valuable benefits of fitness. And so how do we get people to learn how to train and to want to keep training for life and get out of this mindset of like, I just got to go do my exercises today. It's like, you just checked a box rather than like you came in and you created a special, you know, relationship to movement and to training.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like two worlds that I hear you creating. One is one of exploration and interest, and you're exploring all kinds of new skills and some abilities and you're enjoying the process. And the other one is like checking a box because you're supposed to, because someone told you it's the right thing. One of them sounds like fun and something I could see myself doing for my entire life, not fun. I also noticed that in a lot of your videos on Instagram and elsewhere, there's a lot of variety. There's a lot of different exercises. It's not just the same squat, bench, deadlift, a couple of Olympic lifts, some core, and call it a day. A lot of variety, and kind of curious how much that variety is there for sort of like to keep things fresh and interesting. How much of it is part of keeping the body healthy so that you don't get stuck doing the same patterns over and over again? Tell me a little bit about variety in your philosophy.
Yeah, well, I think there's a little bit of both to what you said. Having variety is a way to keep things interesting for people and mentally engaging. I think to a certain degree, variety is really useful to make sure that we don't get stuck in the same movement patterns over and over again, that we explore different parts of our physiology, our anatomy. And I think to a certain degree, variety can be a marketing tool too. It's like, you know, I see this person do the same thing over and over again. It's like, great, like you're a one-trick pony. It's like, well, what I want to show is that these foundational tools of fitness give you access to doing a lot of different stuff. And that's, you know, that was part of the marketing behind CrossFit was, you know, especially with the CrossFit games, you see an athlete show up and, hey, we need you to climb this rope and swim across the pond and then lift this big sandbag and then do this. And they're doing it. You're like, whoa, look at them do all this stuff. Like, did they know they were going to do that? It's like, no, they didn't. They just were, they trained in a smart way and now they can do all this stuff. So, yeah, which is kind of marketing or just kind of connects with that core desire that I think people have, which is to be like limitless. Like, I just want to be able to do everything. You know, I don't want to have like the day come or it's, I got to sit this one out, everybody. I'm not capable of doing that. Mm-hmm. So those are sort of the three areas that I think I look at it from. And for me, you know, to be sort of really like, you know, if I'm honest and I can identify sort of an area that is a weak point or was a weak point early on for me or sort of an area that I needed to grow and learn, was that I had my journey as in fitness was over a decade of doing a lot of the same stuff. It was just go to the gym, push, pull, squat, hinge, you know, like I didn't have a tremendous variety in my training. I followed a lot of just very traditional training progressions. And then I had built a lot of fitness. I would call myself at that point an intermediate advanced trainee. And that's when I found CrossFit. And so then I, on top of this foundation, I started to learn more variety and I got more, you know, I didn't learn variety on day one. I tried to learn the simple stuff where I was being taught the simple stuff. So I end my career in CrossFit as arguably one of the more fit individuals around who could do a lot of stuff. And you could give me pretty much anything. And I could pick that up pretty quickly. And I started to just really move into exploration and variety a lot. And it was fun and I was capable and I could get a great training stimulus from all of this variety because I had already put in years of hard work. And then we were getting customers who were beginner intermediate. They were drawn to the variety because it looked fun and it was fun. But then there was this line of efficacy, you know, take a new person. What's the best thing to make them do? Squat, bench, press, pull up. Deadlifts, just the fundamentals, do it over and over again and take advantage of the newbie gains. You know, like you don't need to do, you know, kettlebell snatch, windmill complexes. You know, it's not necessary. There might be a time and a place for that, but, and so what I've come to learn and how I've evolved is, okay, what is the intersection between using variety as a tool to keep training fun, but also ground that training and really, you know, the fundamentals, the basic principles of progressive overload and training, and that have worked. And where this gets even more complicated is that that book hasn't been written on fitness the way I experienced it in CrossFit. It's been written for weightlifting. It's been written for powerlifting. It's been written for calisthenics, but it hasn't been written for, I want to get better at all this stuff all at the same time. I want to be a better power lifter. I want to be a better Olympic lifter. I want to have a better engine and be able to do more cardio faster, more efficiently. I want to be able to do the burpees and the box jumps and the kettlebell swings more effectively and efficiently. That concurrent sort of mash of training, there is no, well, this is how you do it. This is the step-by-step process you do. You know, these fundamental lifts with these types of conditioning workouts, like, so you have to be ready. I have to be ready to explore variety and new paradigms of thinking, because that's what excites me is to do it, you know, do a little bit of it all. And so, yeah, that's where variety fits in. And it's not such a simple, you know, equation that we're like, well, you put two parts variety to eight parts of fundamentals, and then you got yourself the perfect recipe.
That makes a lot of sense and matches up my experience as a strength coach for me, that mastering the fundamentals for your buck with beginning trainee, and then there can be, depending on who you're training, you know, I would have clients where they were just like chipmunks who like were requesting and wanting a lot of variety. And I had to try to explain to them if match for their goals, or if, you know, they were willing to maybe sacrifice getting as strong as they could by continuing to work on one particular leg just for the name of trying some new. So I guess it kind of depends on the minds, because there's other people who, like me, who are pretty happy doing the fundamentals over and over and over again, you know, and they don't need as much variety. So there's kind of the psychology as well. So there's a lot of factors. One thing that you said that also resonated with, and it seems to be sort of popular in the fitness world now with like the Ido Portal sort of popularized movement generalist, and CrossFit popularized being pretty good at everything, you know, practicing all kinds, being a gymnast, Olympic weightlifter, sprinter, you know, now swimmer and all kinds of different things. And so the idea of being a little bit good at everything is really personally, but you're right. It's no one's written the book about that. They've written the book about how to be a good football player, a good sprinter, many, many books.
Yeah.
So when is your book coming out on that?
Well, there's a lot more research that has to happen. I think writing the book on how to be a specialist, you know, that is something that people really like to do, and for good reason, because when you go narrow, you learn a lot of detail, and then you can compile that all into a, you know, a resource like a book that helps people to understand that. I think when it comes to being a generalist, you know, we really have to look at like, well, what are the training methods or the strength characteristics or the movement patterns that have the best carryover to other activities and other endeavors. That's what we're searching. That's what I'm searching for. I don't want to write the book and it'd be like, okay, you're going to do this, much of that, and like list out 100 different things that you have to be generally good at. I'd rather find 20 things you need to be generally good at. And if you are good at those 20 things, I could argue that you'll never find something in the world that you can't do. You're not going to be world-class, but you know, and that this is very much the CrossFit sort of charter. It's like, hey, if you learn CrossFit, you apply the 9 functional foundational moves of CrossFit across different mixtures and combinations and levels of intensity and durations and blah, 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 you're going to be able to do a lot of stuff. And this is very true. And for me, certainly, and for a lot of people, and it's also this system that needs we need to have a much better dial on the intensity aspect of it so that we can, it could be in the hands of a lot more people. And ultimately, you know, there's another part of the equation that we haven't discussed yet. Maybe we will, but, you know, functional bodybuilding was also born out of this desire to meet the needs of people who want to look really good, that there's an aesthetic component to fitness that needs to be acknowledged, because most people, when they state their goals, it's to lose weight, change their body, feel more confident, look a particular way. And if we just say, well, do all these things, they're going to get you strong, they're going to make you more functional, they're going to make you have better cardio and health, you know, where's the part that says do this and you'll get muscles and look better? Like that has to be named, and it should be. And that's a big draw for people. And that's without that component, I don't care how functional they feel, like they will often feel like, well, maybe I'm moving a little bit better, or I'm lifting heavier weights, but like, you know, I still have excess body fat, and that doesn't feel good. That's not the social currency that I'm trying to have.
Yeah, I think your the name functional bodybuilding whole message really struck a chord with me, and is striking a chord with a lot of people, because it does include both of those aspects. Like it used to be, if you were just like an Arnold Schwarzenegger bodybuilder guy, you're like, I want to look good, and if I'm good at sports or if I can function really well, I don't really care. Maybe that is still that way for some people, but I can only speak personally for me, and for a lot of people that I talk to, they want to look good and move well. And that's exactly what you're teaching people with the functional bodybuilding. So I'd love if you would dive in a little bit more about specific, what is it? I'm sure it's not bodybuilding and then a Swiss ball, because some people associate those things that are functional training on us and bodybuilding training. What is functional bodybuilding? What are like the core principles?
Well, I think when it comes to bodybuilding, we have to like address that, you know, there are certain types of resistance training that lend themselves well to building strength, and other types of resistance training or approaches to resistance training that lend themselves well to building muscle. And when people want to look a particular way, they want to improve their look, it is almost always, you know, a product of building muscle. And that can be, hey, someone's like, I don't want to bulk up, I just want to lean out. You want to build muscle. That's what you want to do. You build muscle and then you lose body fat, you recomposition your body, you get the look that you're wanting. Hey, I want to build muscle. Okay, clearly, then you got to build muscle, right? So it's kind of, you're like, I want to lean out, or I want to build, I want to get jacked, like whatever, either way, you got to build muscle. So a functional bodybuilding, it's like, I want to look at that. Like, let's be really thoughtful about the types of resistance training that we, you know, promote or we include in our programs. You know, we have training options for people that allow them to explore maximal strength, and they might PR their lifts, and many people do, but I'm not saying like, hey, this is the PR program that's going to get you to max out your back squat and get your best bench press ever and deadlift. Saying these are going to get you strong, but they're going to be really effective at helping you, you know, stimulate muscle building. And now, if you go back to that example of like the Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's, you know, I'm build muscle at all costs. Well, they take that to the extreme. And one of the drawbacks or trade-offs to building the most amount of muscle possible is that you don't give yourself, you can't give yourself opportunities to explore certain aspects of fitness that would detract from that. Doing cardio detracts from building maximal muscle. Specifically doing types of cardio that, you know, elevate your heart rate or push your intensity levels above, you know, something that would be considered more steady state. So those are sort of mutually exclusive if you're looking at maximizing, you know, muscle building. Same thing goes for somebody who wants to maximize aerobic capacity. I mean, just look at a bodybuilder next to, you know, the winner of the Tour de France, right? Totally different body types, right? You know, that Tour de France winner has just enough muscle on their upper body to like hold the bike frame, like, and not much else, right? So somebody who's like, I love cardio, I want to build my cardio, but I still want to have some muscle, I want to have a chest. It's like, okay, well, you realize like you could go to the extremes or we could meet in the middle. And what does the middle look like? So functional bodybuilding is like, we have to have a certain perspective on how we approach resistance training. And then we have to combine that with other disciplines like cardiovascular training or, you know, building body weight training skills that you can sort of enhance both. You can build muscle and you can build cardio simultaneously. And then the final piece is the quality of our movement. Like, how well do we move? A simple way of describing this is like, if I go in and I contract the quadriceps muscle hard enough against resistance, it's going to get it to grow. And, you know, Nautilus and machines like flooded the gym world for decades and decades because they were really effective at helping people to create focused muscle contractions in a stable, safe way. You know, you could really overload tissues on a machine pretty quickly for beginners and entry-level trainees, because you didn't have to learn how to do, you know, proper squat or a proper deadlift. You could just get on the machine and then push against it, right? Now, at some point, we want to coordinate what those muscles do in isolation into more of a unified movement pattern. You know, so how do we teach people to move? Right? How do we teach people to squat well? How do we teach people to step up on a box, to pull themselves up over a bar, to, you know, swing a kettlebell, right? Or something like that. Like, properly. How to, and good movement is, and maybe like the Ido Portales, like, you know, you watch somebody like Ido Portal in his movement prime when he was really doing a lot of training and a lot of kind of performance style stuff on YouTube. It was like, whoa, this guy, he could do anything. He's just freedom of movement in any way possible, right? Versus, you know, the person who's pretty immobile, has bad hips, bad back, bad knees, you know, you could just see how they walk. They have, their gait is off, you know, getting down and up out of chairs is a struggle. So those are just different layers. I mean, different ends of the spectrum. And to become Ido Portal, you have to invest a tremendous amount of time to build skill. It's a deep dedication, almost an obsession you have to get to that level of movement. But how can we create good movement? And of course, there's the muscle bound, you know, bodybuilder who, you know, is kind of they can't move as fluidly through life. That was a trade-off that they made in order to get really big. And so how do we build muscle but not give up on this idea of I want to move well throughout my life? Mm-hmm. So I didn't exactly describe what a training session looks like. It's more like these are the principles that I have to contend with and think about every time I'm like looking at, you know, building programs for our clients and for our customers. There's no going down one path deeply without trading off something. So we want to go down deeply on the muscle building, you know, rabbit hole and really get jacked. Like, okay, well, what are we giving up over here? Hey, I want to really explore great range of motion and strength through length and do a lot of, you know, mobility training. And what am I giving up on the muscle building side of things? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we like finding that middle ground, you know, for clients and for our, in our training systems. I think that's what people are resonating with. And that's what resonates with me, what excites me, you know, because I'd like to specialize in something or kind of have a bias for a little bit. You know, we have a training program in functional bodybuilding called PUMP. And that's sort of like the hypertrophy, muscle building biased portion of our training. And I'll focus on that for 6 to 10 weeks and, you know, do it. And then I'm like, but I really want to get back into some of this more advanced cardio, you know, conditioning. And I want to explore my Olympic lifts again, you know, so I might venture over here. Never straying so far to one side that it feels like, oh my gosh, I'm starting from zero.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes the core of functional bodybuilding is literally kind of being at the center of all these diverse physical qualities that you could develop, the biomotor ability, you know, your speed and your strength and your plyometric and your cardio and all of that. Your core philosophy is being somewhere in the center and developing all. But within that, like other sports, you have your B phases where you're just kind of staying right there in the center, working better at everything. But there are times that you do sort of, in a generalist kind of way, specialize in one particular area. It could be a max strength phase or a speed power phase, or maybe you need to step back and work on your technique or your flexibility or your balance. There's even kind of room for periodic specialization inside of a generalist approach. Mm-hmm. I wanted to focus a little bit on aesthetic side, because one thing that's notable about you, I mean, if you look around at the general fitness world or just who I see in the gym, often there'll be really big, bulky, muscular guys, and there'll be a few lean and ripped guys, but there's not many muscular and lean guys who stay like that all the time or for almost year round practically. You seem to be one of those guys. And I think anyone who's I think your physique be a model for your average 20, 40 something year old guy. And so we want to know the secrets. And you're allowed to say discipline and being more consistent than the average guy. But what would you say mm-hmm. really makes the difference? A lot of it obviously is just long training history. You were a competitive athlete in the sport. You had all kinds of incentives to train hard for a long period of time. And so we know that's a huge part of it. But mm-hmm. what makes the difference really bottom line? Someone who's muscular and lean like yourself and people who never quite crack the code of building enough muscle or getting to that level of lean.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll spare you the whole conversation that most people would want me to talk about, which is like, okay, well, what performance enhancers have you used and what has been your, because it's really not an exciting conversation. It's, you know, I am 37 going on 38 in just a couple months. And I've been around the sports world since I was a little kid. I got, you know, into college where, in hindsight, yeah, there were probably plenty of guys that I crossed paths with in the weight room that were using some type of performance enhancers. I was completely oblivious and naive to it. There were also plenty of people in my younger years training at the Globo gyms that in hindsight were likely using performance enhancers, steroids, because they had the most impressive physiques that I've ever seen. And I was just admiring them and trying to learn from what exercise are they doing? What are they eating? You know, again, naive to that. And then even in my CrossFit days, there were athletes that were testing positive for performance enhancing drugs. And I was under the impression that pretty much myself and all the people I competed with and against, like, were relatively clean. Like, I knew there were some people testing positive, but I was, you know, it was a new sport. And I was seeing just tremendous amount of progress in myself without them. So I was like, yeah, I just think we're kind of too young to be having this. And now clearly they're prevalent in the sport of CrossFit. So I just have always been a little bit behind on that. And for people that haven't followed my story, you know, they don't know what I've been doing. It'd be easy to say, like you said, like, you don't see people with like full muscle bellies that are lean in a kind of like an ongoing way, you know, like for years at a time. You know, my body fat percentage has probably fluctuated by 2 or 3 percentage points up and down over the course of the last, you know, 10 years, but it's mostly stayed about the same. And, you know, I had a period of time where I gained a decent amount of muscle during my CrossFit years, as I was like approaching the end of my career. And then the last 5 years, I've kind of lost a little bit of muscle mass. But throughout that whole time, it's been pretty consistent. So it's like, I could show, you know, year after year after year, it's like, it hasn't changed dramatically. There've been periods of time, especially in the last couple of years, where now that I'm outside of CrossFit, like, you know, been able to make different choices with my nutrition because I don't have this physical demand on me to like eat a ton and fuel with a lot of carbohydrates and lots of sugars and really just prioritize recovery over all else. Like, I could experiment with prioritizing aesthetics and how I want to change my body composition with food manipulation. So gotten a little bit leaner, you know, in the last couple of years than maybe I was when I competed in CrossFit. The secrets though that people really don't love to hear about is, and I've said this before and it just rubs some people like the wrong way, because people don't want to hear that they're not working hard enough. They're like, I work really freaking hard. Like, I work so hard and I haven't achieved what you've achieved, so you must be cheating. And what I want to say with like just the most compassionate tone and, you know, open heart is you haven't worked hard enough yet. And I hope you see that as like an exciting possibility and not an attack at your ego or an attack at you as a person. There's a certain mental preoccupation almost that has to be inside of you to achieve sort of a certain aesthetic for long periods. Like, it has to be, you know, it's the thing you think about when you wake up and you go to bed. You know, at times in my life, it's been, we'll call it pathological. You know, it's not been a healthy relationship to thinking about food and about training and about the balance between how I'm going to, you know, move both of those things in my life with all the other obstacles that I may have. I can say now that like after 20 years of doing training, like it's easier to do what, you know, to sort of take the foundation that I built of muscle and of body composition and habits and hold it. But it's still hard to this day to make changes, you know, and to move the needle in one direction or another. So there's a lot of mental preoccupation that goes with, like, you have to think about it. It has to be number one. And then I have had over the years a lot of really like strong motivating factors that have held me accountable. You know, my years in competitive fitness were profound because I operated for 7 years sort of under this like daily assumption that like I needed to be working harder because somebody else was beating me. That is powerful. And that at the end of the season or the start of the season, I have to show up and I have to put my name on a leaderboard amongst, you know, for everybody to see. Like there's no hiding in this sport. It's going to be completely broadcast to the world. And that drove me to do some exceptionally hard things. It's like that was the buy-in that I had to be more committed than I'd ever been in my life. And that's super powerful. So somebody who sits behind their keyboard and can throw comments around and has the anonymity, you know, and they just get to be this person that is out there just training. It's like, maybe you don't have enough accountability on your plate. Maybe you have not put your hat on a national, international stage to be seen, which maybe makes you put down the cookie on, you know, Friday night or skip the beer on Saturday night for 7 years, not just a weekend, you know. And then fast forward, you know, my business became very visible online, you know, social media and how I present myself in the public eye as a fitness, you know, coach, influencer. And so that holds me accountable too. You know, my wife will be, you know, at periods of time, it's like, babe, I got to do like a bunch of content filming next week. Like I'm not really feeling like going out for sushi, like on Sunday. Like I'm not feeling good about it. Like I've not been in like a really good rhythm with my food and my training and my body. And like, I got to be on camera shirtless, like for hours. Like, I think I'd just rather eat at home tonight, babe. That makes her sad. She's like, I'd like to go. I want to go out and have a sushi dinner and, you know, let off some steam. And I make room for that in my life. But there are times when I have to say, no, like, I can't do that. I'm not doing that every night. Like that's a once a month thing or twice a month thing. And someone is like, oh man, it's totally unreasonable. Like you don't have to, I would never want to live life like that. Like, I'm not saying you should live life like that. Yeah. I'm not saying that you need to. I'm not saying that that's a valuable thing for you, you know? And I go through phases where I'm really not that focused and strict about it. But there's a certain point for me as a human where I find myself being like, I've been too relaxed. Like this doesn't feel good for me anymore. Everybody has that in their body. It's like, I need to like, you know, all right, something's got to change. I got to tighten things up. Like I've been drinking too many beers and I've been doing, you know, so they go from like drinking 3 nights a week to 2 nights a week. And that's a big step for them. For me, I have the same thing. It's just not going from 3 nights of drinking to 2 nights of drinking. It's going from, you know, I didn't track my macros like super closely for, you know, a month and I'm not happy about that. So I'm going to go back to being like really diligent about it. Something of that nature. But really it's like I think capture a bit of what the level of like commitment that one needs to have, the level of accountability that someone needs to have. Mm-hmm. These are, you know, how my body, you know, looks is a reflection of dedication, being more dedicated and more consistent than most people even consider they need to be in order to achieve something like that. Then on top of that, there's like that needs to happen in with diet and with lifestyle choices, and it needs to happen in the gym too. And people can kind of do one or the other, but maybe not both for as long as they need to. And that's also difficult for people to hear.
Yeah, but very, very realistic. It actually mirrors what I interviewed two-time Olympian Hector Cotto, who was a former training partner of mine, two Olympic Games and the 110-meter hurdles. And I asked him a similar kind of question. And his answer was basically like, to be the best, you have to die on the track. And you don't have to die on the track just once. Like, you need to do it every practice. You need to be beating the other best athletes that are around you all the time to reach a high level. So on the physique front, you know, you have a enviable and admirable level of physique. And I think it's very, very realistic if I or anyone else sort of says like, have I been going as hard as that for the past 20 years of like constantly competing with other people to get your name on the lead, competing in actual competitions with timers and judges and in sports and Division I sports? And have I been doing that for the past 20 years? Okay, then I probably shouldn't complain if I don't look like Marcus because I haven't been surrounded by the kind of environment. So I thought it was really great that you just pointed out just that truth. But two, you pointed out something which can be very helpful to people, which is it's not just, okay, Marcus said, I just need to work harder. I'm going to go to the gym by myself with no accountability, no eyes on me, and just start working harder for the next 1, 3, 5, 10 years. It's going to be really hard unless you're particularly motivated in, to do it in secrecy and silence by yourself with no one around, no coaches, no teammates, no accountability, no support. And so a really good takeaway for someone who's listening to this and wants to build their body or build their athleticism is find a way to put yourself in environments which help that naturally happen, because that sort of like social pressure, I call it like positive social pressure, where not an unhealthy thing, but it's just like that competitive drive comes out. If you can find a way of putting that into your life, setting up the conditions such that there is that positive, and then maintain that for the periods of time that you've maintained it, you're probably going to like the way your looks.
As long as
you stay healthy, which is the next thing that I want to talk about. And we'll wrapping up the call.
Well, let's do it. But before we jump to that, I just want to say, you know, to be world-class at something, you need to go and die on the track. You need to go die in the gym. You need to die in the gym for 7 years trying to do CrossFit better than everybody else. That's to be world-class. To build a world-class physique, you need to go into the bodybuilding, you know, gym, and you need to die underneath the leg press, you know, every week over and over and over again, you know, like, and just keep in mind what I'm saying, it's to be world-class. So if you look at somebody and you are inspired to get better because of how they look, that's one thing. To look at somebody and be like, I should have that, then you really have to listen. It's like, yeah, to be LeBron James, you better be, you know, you better have great genetics and you better be ready to work harder than you've ever thought you needed to work for your lifetime. Right. And, but if you just want to like, you see Marcus and you're like, oh, I love that guy's physique. I want to get in better shape. I want to like build some more muscle. Then learn from what we're saying. It's like create an accountability system. Be ready to go work harder than you've worked before. Like you don't have to work as hard as that, but you got to work harder than you did before. And you have to do it consistently for a long period of time. And start thinking in years, not in weeks or months. Really start thinking in years. And if something is not, you can't do this for years to come, then dial it back. Find the thing you can do for years to come that's harder than what you've done before. And now, like my 7 years in CrossFit were where I built all of my best things ever. I will never touch those PRs again. I will likely never have that level of muscle mass. When I finished competing in CrossFit, like my body scans would say like I had 108 or 110 pounds of skeletal muscle mass. Now that on a 5'10" frame at 180 pounds, like that is virtually impossible. I'm going to have to gain a lot of muscle back, you know, in my 40s, which might not happen. But I set a tremendous foundation there by working really hard. And now I know what it means to work hard, to live and maintain what I have for years to come. And I can still coach people who haven't achieved that with this system to gain and grow a lot.
One last question on the physique front, because I think it's important that you brought it down, not just from the superstar LeBron, Olympic athletes, top physique competitors, but also the average guy or gal who just wants to be better than they were before, can still apply all of these principles. They apply them to the degree. So that's important. And so to kind of give people like a realistic expectation of like to move in the direction of a Marcus physique, to feel muscular and lean. What do you think is a reasonable amount of time where you're not trying to be the leader and everything, the superstar, but you're trying to like, yeah, that guy really, you can tell he looks out and he looks great. How many hours a week for the average guy?
I like to think that you have to be committed to resistance training, probably 4 days a week, optimally 5. Like you need to get in lift weights and you need to move every single day. And now that could look, you know, what do you do on those days that you don't go to the gym? What's movement related there? You find a practice that you love, mountain biking, you know, long walks, running, swimming, playing a sport, something like that. And then you basically have to, you know, you have to be a true like 80-20, 90-10 type of person on the nutrition front. People say they're 80-20, but they're really 50-50, you know? And you have to learn the fundamentals, which we teach, you know, it's like protein, check, quality food, check, making most of your meals, check, like all these things that allow people to maintain good caloric balance that don't make them have to weigh food. It's like do it this way. And you'll learn a ton. And if you apply that and you have like some accountability system or some way, like it could be just stepping on the scale every day or every week or getting a body composition scan every day or every month. You know, something that like lets you know, like, okay, I'm not being as honest about my, you know, how diligent I'm being. Mm-hmm. I think that's gotta be something that's built in.
I want to talk a little bit because we've talked a lot about longevity and the importance of doing this consistently over a long period of time. One of the things that takes people out of the game is injury. Injuries can be overtraining, not knowing how to periodize their training, mobility problems, stability problems, technique problems, you know, sleep, nutrition, all kinds of stuff. On kind of like the structural physical front, what do you do, you know, aside from periodization, aside from managing your stress and recovery in a good way, what do you do in terms of rehab, prehab, mobility, flexibility that you recommend?
Well, the other... The other part that I think you alluded to, or you said it differently, but one thing I think is important to understand is that injuries and like they only present themselves when we're at extreme deficits of recovery or we're pushing super high, you know, intensity. They generally don't happen in the middle when somebody is well slept, well hydrated, well fed, and doing, you know, moderate to moderate intense activity. That's not where you see it happen. So it's, hey, I want to make a change in my body and I want to make a change quickly. So I'm going to really restrict my calories, or I'm going to really push my training way harder than I've ever done before. I'm going to go from doing 2 workouts a week to 7 or 8 workouts a week, right? This is when people find themselves into these situations where they get injured or they try and push to world-class levels in something. CrossFit, lots of injuries, right? Now, you might be okay with that, but most people are not okay with injury. And this is like the final piece to the puzzle that I'm balancing is I could try and get there quickly, but I pose a greater risk to my health and well-being by trying to go fast. Could get mental health issues, physical health, injuries, etc. So, okay, I'm going to choose a slower, more steady approach, and that might mitigate some of the injury risk. So that's kind of the other thing is like, we're not going to be world-class because if I push it super intensely on this, you know, today, I might not be able to come back tomorrow. So I'd rather go 7 out of 10 today and be able to put in, you know, all of my next 30 workouts than go 9 out of 10 today and miss 6 of my next 30 workouts. And now I'm down to 80% as opposed to 100% compliance. From an actual, like, what do we do in the gym? That's where the movement variety and the exploration, I think, is important. Some of your training is dedicated to intense, focused, easy to accomplish movements that allow you to push intensity, right? Back squat, lunges, deadlifts, bench press. But a glute bridge single arm floor press, okay, that's a variety movement, gets me out of my typical pattern, and I can't push as intensely. So that's allowing me now to focus on a different quality in the tissue, a different nervous system connection to my muscles, just a different coordination element. That is what helps preserve, I think, a lot of athletes, you know, is to do that kind of training. They're still building, they're getting in work, they're getting in reps. This is continuing to build their foundation of fitness. But it's like, I made a choice that we did six exercises today, two of which you are very comfortable with. You know how to progress. You have your weights from last week. We're going, going, going. And then four that are a little uncommon, a little different, off axis, unstable, you know, different range of motion, different, you know, maybe something you've never done before. That is forcing you to back off and you're not going to be able to push as intensely. And that helps preserve you over time. I think there's also part of the training system that looks at, you know, what resistance training movements really lend themselves well to helping people build strength in vulnerable positions. Like where to, you know, this is where I get a lot of inspiration from somebody like, you know, Ben Patrick, who has sort of shown, hey, you can take certain strength training exercises if you execute them really well through big, long ranges of motion in this particular way, you can bulletproof your joints. You can make your knees stronger, your ankles stronger, your hips stronger by doing these things. We're not going for max weight. We're going for quality and exploring greater length. So there's an element of that in our training. There's an element of just controlling people's intensity. It's like, you know, we're tremendously capable of healing our bodies and we're super resilient so long as we don't push the threshold all the way. It's like this car can run for 200,000 miles, but if you drive it above 90 miles per hour, you know, all the time, it's not going to make it to 200,000 miles. It's going to crap out at 40,000 miles. You're going to need to repair it, right? So that's as much of the, it's like, do you need a new mobility program or do you just need to dial it back a little bit? You know, people who want to be world-class, they need the mobility programs. Why? Because they are not willing to dial it back. They actually, it's not an option to dial it back. And I never had the option to dial it back when I was competing to be the best in CrossFit. That's why I did the mobility. That's why I did all the other recovery things. That's why I saw a physical therapist and like a ART person. I was like in five different offices a week. It's like, and someone's like, there's something wrong. Why are you doing all this to your body? You're here. Why are you getting all this treatment? It's like, just stop doing the thing. It's like, no, I want to do the thing. Like, that's my thing. You just patch me up, you know? And so if you're in a general fitness program and you find yourself in the physical therapist's office three times a week or three times a month, and you feel like you need to adopt a new mobility routine just to get your fitness, you know, your workout in, then, and you didn't sign up to be world-class, you just signed up to feel better and look better, then you seriously need to look at your training program and be like, there's something messed up about this. Like, you do not have to be in pain to like lose 10 pounds of body fat. You don't. Like, it's going to be uncomfortable at times. Like, you're going to have to push yourself in a way that your brain might be telling you, I don't want to do this, but it shouldn't wind you up in the pain clinic, you know, and it shouldn't be like, you know, God, I have this big injury now.
Yeah, that's great. I'm curious, this is just kind of a personal curiosity. Do you include any like speed and agility training in your current training? You do any sprints, any agility work for play any sports or anything like that? Or is it more gym based?
It's almost entirely gym based. I ride my mountain bike and I come to the gym and that's it. I love the idea of, you know, if I get inspired, I might start doing some sports specific stuff because I'm playing a bit more golf now than I have in the past, which I love. That's a sport I love. If time or if life ever takes me back to maybe playing a little bit of soccer, you know, I might start to do something like that, but I don't have any real application of speed, you know, in my life right now. I do find it fun, but you know, to go to a track and do speed and agility work, or to, you know, carve out specific time for that, it's not a priority for me in my life right now.
Cool. Just curious, because it's re-entered my life. You know, I had my soccer phase and then my Olympic weightlifting, crossfitting phase, and just kind of general strength and conditioning. And then for a long time, it was just kind of like a general, well-rounded health phase. But recently, I've gotten back into ultimate frisbee of all things. And that's kind of reinvigorated my passion for like speed and agility.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. So just
curious on your end.
Cool.
Well, this has been a really great conversation. I want to acknowledge you for being an inspiration for me and for a lot of people. Like when I watch your videos online and now hearing a little bit more about kind of the background and the philosophy of just trying to be a general, well-rounded, good at a lot of different, look good, feel good, move good kind of athlete. Like that's where I'm going in my life. And I think that's where a lot of my listeners are going. So it's been a pleasure to talk to you. And I want to know, you know, if people want to find out more about you.
Head over to functional-bodybuilding.com. So functional-bodybuilding.com/free. And I think the best place to communicate with us is through our newsletter. So we have a newsletter that goes out twice a week with tons of free content on training and nutrition. Today, as an example, I did a client case study where I took somebody, these are my goals. This is my background. This is my body. This is what I do. How would I approach, you know, my goal? And I write out, this is the training program I would follow. This is how many days a week you should do it. This is the diet that you are likely to be successful on. I would recommend you start with these, you know, numbers. And here's what a sample day looks like in terms of meals. All of that gets like laid out in an email. So that, and then I had an article about sugar and high intensity training and why people who jump right into a high intensity fitness training program without a good nutritional base can often run into obstacles because they start to crave sugars or they start to, you know, binge on bad food. And so I kind of gave kind of a general understanding of why that is and talked about some solutions for people. So those are just a couple of examples of what we put out, but you can sign up for the newsletter. We can communicate with you that way. It's a great place to see what's going on with functional bodybuilding.
Awesome. Well, Marcus, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been a pleasure and talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Shane.